702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, MK supporters gather in Pietermaritzburg as Zuma persists with his private prosecution case. Ramaphosa explains our 13-day load-shedding-free streak. The Cape Town mayor on mop-up operations following the storm. Clarity on the Constitutional Court judges' interviews. Should non-judges be included or not? And a report from Mozambique where almost 100 people have died in a boat accident. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 in Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. In Joburg, the sun is out today, which is very, very exciting. Of course, those mop-up operations taking place in Cape Town, it looks like the worst of that storm is now over. We will speak to the Cape Town mayor. The electricity minister, Kgosietse Ramakgopa, has had a briefing today speaking about load shedding, about how the intensity and frequency is coming down because of aggressive planned maintenance. It's been 13 days since Eskom implemented any load shedding. Did you ever think you would see a streak like that? Send us a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567, if you would like to comment on anything we are speaking about today. Let's start in Pietermaritzburg, where Mkhonto Wesizwe, where party supporters have gathered near the High Court there. Former President Jacob Zuma's private prosecution case is being heard today. Zuma, of course, charging the lead prosecutor in his corruption trial, Advocate Billy Downer, of illegally leaking his confidential doctor's note to the journalist Karen Morn during the arms deal corruption case. Zuma has already lost in this matter six times, but yet he is persisting with this. So let's try and understand why with Nhlanhla Mabaso, EWN's KZN reporter. Nhlanhla, good afternoon to you. Firstly, let's explain the sound behind you, because there's a lot of activity outside the court. Tell us about that first.
Well, many those are MK supporters who are here to support this private prosecution by their leader, former President Jacob Zuma. They are now singing and chanting outside ahead of a reaction and address by some of the party leaders. I must mention the former president himself is not in court, as you would know that he has the other electoral court case that is sitting in Bloemfontein. Now, Mandy, what happened in court briefly was that the private prosecution, you'd recall that it has been dismissed twice by the Supreme Court of Appeal. But because Zuma has another option of approaching the Constitutional Court, then it meant the matter still stands here at the Pietermaritzburg, because while he has that loading appeal at the Court, the judgment that set it aside here at the Pietermaritzburg High Court, you know, is stayed until such a time where this direction of whether it will continue or not, or whether it will be dismissed by the Court inside court.
Just one more question on what's happening outside there, because I think this is quite a good indication, perhaps, of how much support the MK party may have going into the elections. If you had to describe the scene outside court, how much support is there for Zuma?
Well, Mandy, there's hundreds of supporters here. They came with quantum, some came with buses. I must say that the last time we saw something like this outside the Pietermaritzburg High Court was in 2022 and early 2023, when the ANC in the province was still supporting former President Jacob Zuma. Even before the forming, Mandy, of the MK party, there was a time where he had lost support from ANC supporters coming outside court. He's had several appearances in this private prosecution case and the arms deal case without any support. But what we see outside here is the regalia of Mkhonto Wesizwe supporters singing and chanting. But this alone speaks to the amount of support that he has. I mean, this is one person, Mandy, that has always enjoyed a significant amount of support in this particular province of KwaZulu-Natal, even back from the days when he was still the MEC of Economic Development and Tourism and Environmental Affairs, to when he was then elected as Deputy President. So he's one person that continues to enjoy support. But looking now at the dynamics and politically with the MK party, it seems, you know, his support base is growing by the day, because you're in one province, mainly, where people don't specifically have to understand politics in order to support you. But in many instances, a lot of people following MK Party, they are following it on the basis that it's formed by a former president, Jacob Zuma, whom they love so much.
And Khansa, you mentioned the fact that Zuma has already lost in the Supreme Court of Appeal. Both the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court have dismissed his efforts to appeal an order invalidating the private prosecution. Why is he persisting with this? And it must be costing him a fortune. Who's paying for this?
Well, maybe his funders, man. We don't have it on record as to who is paying for his legal fees. But if you look at the MK, people that have been placed in some of the structures, your likes of Vivian business person, you look at the likes of Usmanga Mabaso from Umsinga, a multimillionaire. A lot of people that say they became millionaires during Zuma's reign as president. They are now, aligning themselves with the MK party. Indeed, many, if you look at, like you mentioned, that the matter has been dismissed twice by the SCA, but while he has that appeal in the Concord, it returned here. So according to Karen Mon's lawyer, that's Ben Winks, here in court today, he says that all they want as Karen's lawyers is that this matter be struck off the roll, saying that the former president is wasting the court's time, like the Pietermaritzburg Court, High Court rather, had ruled when dismissing the matter that, when setting aside the matter, that Zuma is actually, abusing the court process. Hence, he approached the Supreme Court of Appeal. But his lawyer, Ngabayo Mzibutile, is basically saying, no, look, we want the matter to continue. Given the fact that Zuma still has the option to appeal this SCA ruling at the Constitutional Court, then they want this matter to be stayed mainly until such time where the Concord can make pronouncement. Then the Pietermaritzburg High Court will then determine whether it continues or not. But we heard here from Judge Kosnati Kili that he's postponing the matter to next week Wednesday for judgment. So it means out of today's proceedings, mainly, he will then decide whether he's ruling against or in favor.
Okay, Nkantla, thank you so much for that. Nkantla Mabaso, EWN KZN reporter. You can get a sense there of the support for the MK party as that private prosecution persists in Pietermaritzburg. At the same time, we are waiting for the electoral court to rule on Jacob Zuma's election eligibility. That's supposed to happen today. Zuma, of course, saying that he can be president again because he did not serve two full terms because he had been recalled. So we're watching that for you too.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
JSC interviews continuing today for that vacancy on the Constitutional Court. Yesterday we spoke with Mbekizeli Benjamin from Judges Matter about the fact that two of the candidates that are being interviewed are not judges, because a decision was taken to allow non-judges to be eligible for the Constitutional Court. But it now seems as though this is a little bit confusing. Mbekizeli Benjamin joining us again. Mbekizeli, good afternoon to you. Before we get into the interviews that are happening today, is there clarity around what happened with Professor Bilchis's candidacy? Is it viable or not? Where are we on that?
Well, the JSC will still have to decide on the viability of his candidacy, because what the JSC will do after they've finished all of the interviews, they will sit in deliberations and decide whether or not they will send the full list of four candidates to the president, or whether they will eliminate any one of the candidates based on suitability. So we'll only know at the end of the day whether Professor Bilchis's candidacy is viable or not.
Okay. Now, tell us about who's being interviewed today and what's happening there.
Yeah, so today's interviews look like they're pretty intense. We are on the second candidate of the day. The earlier candidate was Advocate Alan Dodson, who is also one of the legal practitioners who's not currently a judge and who's vying for a spot on the Constitutional Court. However, the difference with Advocate Dodson is that he was previously a judge of the land claims courts between 1995 and 1999, and then he left and went back to practice, and he's been in practice for the last 20 or so years. His interview was really calm, really focused. And that's probably because he's coming for the third time for an interview for the same position on the Constitutional Court. He was previously successful, in fact, the previous round, and he was one of the four candidates. Unfortunately, the president chose another candidate, but he's been through this process before. Now, the JSC is currently interviewing Justice Thati Makgoka from the Supreme Court of Appeal, and he comes with a long track record of judgment and quite extensive experience in the law, but the intensity of the questions seem to be more focused on his general judicial philosophy, which is something that is both refreshing for the JSC because we haven't gotten those kinds of questions in years, but it's also showing some of his weak points, I guess, in this process.
Mbekizeli, thank you so much for that. Mbekizeli Benjamin, Research and Advocacy Officer at Judges Matter, giving us an update there on what's happening with those interviews for that vacancy on the Constitutional Court.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Also happening this morning, Deputy President Paul Mashatile has delivered a special public lecture on the 30th anniversary of South Africa's democracy. So lots of events happening in the run-up to the 27th of April and that 30th anniversary. Tidi Madia, EWN's Associate Politics Editor, is watching that for us. It occurred to me, Tidi, that we haven't seen a great deal of Paul Mashatile in this election campaign, hey, keeping a low profile.
A little bit. I mean, he was in the Western Cape over the weekend. He's been going to a lot of churches over Easter weekend, like many of the leaders. But I do think that he is keeping a bit of a low profile for multiple reasons. Never mind that he's always in the media lately for wrong reasons. I think News 24 has taken a special interest in Paul. But I also think Paul's network or infrastructure that made him deputy president of the ANC and ultimately of the country has also fallen apart. They're no longer comrades in arms. So the people who were masterminds or strategists just around team brand Paul Mashatile are no longer there. But he was also, Mandy, in the Sunday Times speaking about the water task team this weekend.
So he's been speaking today at delivering this lecture on the 30th anniversary of democracy. What has he said and what's he spoken about?
Speaking about that water task team, where he's been made a head of a task team, I think with hundreds of commissions, task teams and the likes. So here's one more where he said that the country realizes that we are in trouble. I don't know how they're only realizing it now as far as water is concerned, saying that it's not at crisis level yet, but they're working to deal with it before it gets to load shedding level. He also very quickly spoke about load shedding, Mandy, saying that it will come to an end this year, insisting that this is not him electioneering.
It will come to an end this year. Haven't we
that's what
before?
He's. We've been here many, many, many times with this leader. Says he's not saying before elections. He's saying at the end of the year. So far, I think we've had 13 days before, 13 days with without load shedding, but that's an election thing to me. I'm waiting for after the elections to make up my mind about what's at play.
Tidi, thank you very much. Tidi Madia, EWN Associate Politics Editor.
And now, it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
12:21 on the Midday Report. Let's go straight to some breaking news. The EWN team confirming a shooting in Germiston involving illegal miners. Oren Singh, EWN reporter, has rushed out to the scene there behind the Simmer and Jack landfill site. Oren, tell us what we know and what police are saying at this stage.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, we currently have seven men who are suspected to be illegal miners, otherwise known as Zama Zamas, who have been arrested by members of the Kurleni Metro Police Department together with SAPS, a joint operation that was conducted here this morning. EMPD are quite busy in this area. It has for some time, Mandy, been taken over by a rival Zama Zama gangs who are often shooting at each other. The Simmer and Jack landfill site at some stage last year had actually had to close down as it had become unsafe for some of the employees working at this landfill site as well as waste pickers regarding their safety around the frequent shootings that were taking place. As of this morning, police acting on information about Zama Zamas who are operating in the area pounced on these suspected illegal miners, arresting seven of them. Some of them have been injured during a shooting with police. Police allege that the suspected Zama Zamas fired at them, at which they retaliated, and some of them are receiving medical attention from paramedics on scene. Police have confiscated four weapons at this stage, a Mandy, two shotguns, and two pistols. The scene remains cordoned off to members of the public, and police are on standby here, just wrapping up the scene.
Thank you very much for that breaking news. Oren Singh, EWN reporter on the scene there in Primrose in Germiston. Continue to listen to his reports in Eyewitness News as he brings you more of that breaking news story, police arresting seven illegal miners in that area.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Mop-up operations underway in Cape Town as that storm has moved through. 2 days of rainfall, gale force winds as well. But it does look as though the worst of the inclement weather is now over. Schools do remain closed in the Overberg and Cape Winelands area. Let's speak to the mayor of the city of Cape Town, Jordan Hill-Lewis. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. What's the status in Cape Town today in terms of the mop-up operations and what's being done?
Good afternoon, Mandy. It's nice to be with you. Most importantly, the status is that the sun is shining and the wind and the rain have gone. It's a little bit cloudy here in the CBD where I am, but other than that, it's a calm day, and that means that our teams can get out there in the city and carry on and make good progress with the cleanup. There's still lots of residents who are negatively impacted. The worst impact is more than 600 informal structures, shacks basically, which have been either damaged or completely destroyed by very high winds. In the end, we did not get as much rain as was predicted, which we're grateful for. That's great. So there's not too much flooding or burst river banks and so on. The worst impact was that unbelievably strong wind that just ripped through structures. So that's really what the teams are working on most. We've still got, I think at last count, 130 trees that had fallen. And so our parks and recreation teams are cutting trees up all over and getting roads reopened. And there was walls that fell down and fences that blew away and so on. But, of course, the human impact is on those homes, those structures. And so we've received lots of wonderful donations, which I'm really grateful for, and those are being distributed by our teams as well, blankets and food and so on. So it's the cleanup and mop-up operations are going relatively well today, Mandy.
There have been some suggestions that the city's response has been reactive, and that ends up costing you more money. And that, of course, we know that these are seasonal incidents that take place every year. The same thing happened last year. Are you confident that the city is doing enough in terms of planning and budgeting for these natural disasters that occur annually?
Yes, I am. I think the investment that we make in disaster risk management really shows its value in times like this. We have a sophisticated disaster risk management operation coordinated by a professional team who immediately respond, coordinate all services and get things going on the ground, know exactly where things have gone wrong and what needs to be done to fix them. And so that, I think that investment pays dividends. The what's really difficult to plan for, of course, is massively disruptive weather. You know, it's really tough to know how to prevent kind of 100 kilometer an hour winds. In fact, in Stellenbosch, as Premier Windy publicized, they had wind speeds of 300 kilometers an hour. So that's going to have terrible consequences, and you have to just deal with them as quickly as possible and respond instantaneously. So disaster risk management is always going to be somewhat responsive and reactive. And then you have to try and do as much proactive stuff as possible. You know, we have a very comprehensive winter readiness program in the city that goes around and unblocks drains and make sure that water can run away and so on. But even then, as we saw last September, when you get 120 millimeters of rain in 3 or 4 hours, river banks are going to burst. That's, you know, that's nature.
My understanding is that the City of Cape Town has discontinued the provision of building starter kits over the past few years, and that you've clashed with national government over the disaster relief funds. A question from our reporter who's been out on the ground speaking to people is just some clarity on where we are with that, because some of the victims are saying that they would like to see those building materials. So some clarity on that, Mayor?
Yes, no, there's been a lot of confusion and misinformation. In fact, those kits are funded by something called the Emergency Housing Grant, which is a national grant, and which was discontinued probably 2 or 3 years ago already by the National Department of Human Settlements, in the sense that it was no longer passed on to the city to spend. It was centralized. So we have to make application to the National Department for access to the Emergency Housing Grant. They then take a few weeks to either approve or decline that application, and then we get money with which we can use to buy building materials. So we have recently been in a conversation with them to say we know these things happen with depressing regularity every year, unfortunately. It is the Cape of Storms, and it's called that for a good reason. So can we proactively make application to the emergency housing grant and keep these things in a storeroom or a warehouse, and then we can use them when these incidents happen, rather than applying each time? And they have very recently, but I mean literally in the last 3 to 4 weeks, they have agreed that we can do that. So I think they actually will be making a return to the scene sometime shortly. But it's not the case, and this is often repeated, but it is not the case that the city discontinued those. It is the case that across the country, cities were no longer allowed to access that grant. It was controlled centrally and nationally.
Mayor, thank you for that. The City of Cape Town Mayor, Jordan Hill Lewis, explaining the situation in terms of mop-up operations and what is being done following the storm over the past couple of days. Good to hear the sun is out in Cape Town. The sun is out in Joburg too. Long may it last.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hi, Mandy. It's Linda here and Lady Smith. You know, I fully stand with Jacob Zuma for this prosecution of beat it down and so. Since when somebody is sick and his notes on the papers? Since when? Where are you working right now at 702? You cannot allow someone to take your signal to the media, to the journalist. Does Jacob Zuma is not a person who's having his rights to defend his rights in this country? It's only him. So why then we don't squash this nonsense called constitution? Come on, man. This is Linda from Ladysmith. Thank you.
Hi, Mandy. How old is Zuma? Honestly speaking, didn't he serve some time when Thabo Mbeki was recalled? So if you add that one and the few months that was left for the two-term period, he really had served, man. Let him stop being greedy and go home. I mean, shouldn't we put a cap in terms of age on who can become a president or be an MP? Really, an old man over 80 is still going on and want to lead the country. No, this is just too much of this old man.
There's just so much to say in response to those two voice notes. Linda, firstly, I don't even know how to respond to that, because this has been ventilated in the courts. There have been 6 court rulings by the High Court, by the Supreme Court of Appeal, by the Constitutional Court on whether or not there was a violation here of Jacob Zuma's privacy, and that has been established. So he is just burdening the courts at this point. So I'm sorry, but I disagree with you. If you really want to get into it, we can. And then on this thing of Jacob Zuma, Advocate Thembeka Nkukotobi explained this yesterday about the fact that he's been convicted. There is a criminal record, even though the current president did make that decision on the medical parole. Regardless, he was convicted of a crime. He has served 2 terms. We don't have a law around the age of the president. This has been an issue that has been discussed before, whether or not we should put a cap. I mean, look at America. Joe Biden is, what, like 80-something? Between him and Trump, they're both over 80. So there is an argument for younger leadership, but really a lot to talk about. Thank you for those WhatsApp voice notes.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Just before the break, we did speak to the mayor of Cape Town, Jordan Hill-Lewis, who's not 80 years old, about the situation with disaster management in Cape Town and what is happening. I mentioned the fact that schools in Overberg and the Cape Winelands remain closed today. Yesterday, we spoke to the Western Cape MEC of Education spokesperson, Kerry Machlin, and she has sent us a voice note giving us an update on that situation. Let's have a listen.
Kerry Machlin, spokesperson to Western Cape Education Minister David Mainier. Schools in the Cape Winelands and Overberg Education Districts remain closed today, Tuesday the 9th of April. The second day of closure is only applicable to these two districts. Schools in the Helderberg area of the Metro East Education District reopened this morning. A decision on any further days of closure that might be necessary this week will be taken later today based on updated weather models. There may be some additional schools that request closure due to severe infrastructure damage or inaccessibility. These are considered by the department on a case-by-case basis, and schools with the necessary permission to close communicate directly with their parents. We have already received reports of damage at 132 schools, ranging from minor damage such as leaks or fallen trees to more serious damage like missing roof panels. The damage is currently being assessed and repaired by contractors. We thank all of our officials, principals, teachers, and parents for their speedy response to the decision to close schools in these areas and for the support that they continue to provide to our learners in the Western Cape.
That voice note from Kerry Machlin, who's the spokesperson to the Western Cape MEC of Education. So an update on the situation with schools. In response to the interview with the mayor, "Hi Mandy, I live in Cape Town. I can tell you the city has the most amazing disaster management team. It is so well organized. The city is ready and acts with efficiency in the face of these mostly unpredictable disasters." I did ask the mayor whether or not they could be more proactive rather than reactive, and you would have heard his response to that. Of course, in Joburg and Pretoria, there has also been inclement weather. I saw some footage of a motorist being rescued from a flooded road early today in Tshwane. The mayor of Tshwane sharing some images there, and the EMS team is doing fantastic work in Tshwane. Let's look at the situation in Joburg. Robert Mulaoutsi is the EMS spokesperson. Robert, good afternoon to you. Tell us what your teams have had to deal with over the last couple of days.
Good afternoon, Ms. Mandy. So far in Johannesburg, we didn't receive any major incidents which we had to maybe evacuate people or rescue people overnight. However, we are concerned, Ms. Mandy, about our residents, church communities who normally visit river streams now. Because yesterday, last night when we were driving around most of our river streams, we still see people visiting these river streams, conducting some baptism while we have these rainfalls, which is really dangerous. So we are pleading with our communities to refrain from visiting these river streams, you know, because the risk is much more higher for them to be swept away while they are conducting those rituals. In terms of us being on standby, yes, our teams are on standby monitoring all seven regions of the city. So we're hoping that our motorists will continue to exercise caution, try and avoid crossing roads which might be flooded, and also our residents in our low-lying areas to avoid crossing river streams.
Robert, thank you so much. An important reminder there for people about what to do in terms of this weather and how to behave. Elizabeth Fillion, the weather forecaster, has sent us a voice note just to give us an update on what the situation is. Let's have a listen to that.
Very good afternoon. This is Elizabeth Fuljoen from the South African Weather Service. So this main weather system, the cutoff low that we've been talking about for the past few days, is currently positioned over the Eastern Cape. So it's moved eastwards of the Western Cape, with the bulk of the rainfall currently occurring in the Eastern Cape. There was quite a lot of rainfall this morning in the Western Cape, but good news is that most of it is starting to clear away, and the heavy rainfall is now moving away from that area. In Gauteng, we've also been experiencing some on and off showers this morning. That will also start to taper down, so less showers are expected this evening. And by tomorrow, it is going to clear up quite nicely. Rainfall in the Western Cape, a few passing showers are still expected tomorrow, but nothing to be too concerned about. Temperature-wise, tomorrow morning in Johannesburg is going to be rather cool. We're only looking at a low or a minimum temperature of 9 degrees, so we're seeing quite a bit of a drop. Maximum temperatures, a high of 21 today, 22 tomorrow, and it's generally going to stay like that for the rest of the week. In Cape Town, today a high of 20 degrees is expected, slightly cooler tomorrow at 18, but then from Thursday picking up once again to around 22 for the remainder of the week.
Elizabeth Fullion, a weather forecaster, sending us that update. Hey, the sun is shining outside, the sky is blue. It's amazing when you think in Joburg how it was pouring this morning. It was so overcast, and now it's like a perfect blue sky. I have a quick update for you. I had just played you that voice note about the schools and the education department. They have literally just sent through a press release saying that schools will be open tomorrow, Wednesday, the 10th of April. This means that schools in the Cape Winelands and Overberg Education Districts will all reopen tomorrow. Schools in all education districts will be open on Wednesday, the 10th of April. The Western Cape Education Department will formally communicate these decisions to schools shortly. There may be schools that request closure due to severe infrastructure damage or inaccessibility. This will be considered by the department on a case-by-case basis. They have received reports of damage at 144 schools. Long story short, that schools will be open tomorrow in all education districts in the Western Cape.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hi, Mandy. Having the Minister of Providing Electricity applauding for providing electricity for 13 days in a row is really, it's like clapping if you see a fish swimming. Brian Samson-Grace.
Good afternoon. It's so heartbreaking that Jacob Zuma is from one court to another. I mean, this poor man, is he not tired of going to court? Yesterday I was looking at him on TV. You know, he was literally sleeping because I think what they were discussing, it was just beyond his comprehension. Someone is pushing an agenda. It's not himself. Guys, let's help the poor man. And the MK, are they not seeing a light at the end of the tunnel? Because they are actually losing votes for whatever that they are pushing. They are forever in court. Guys, is this the South Africa that we voted for? No, ANC must go. That's Madimo. Thank you.
Thanks, Madiba. I raised this issue with our reporter about who is paying for all of these various court applications on behalf of Jacob Zuma. He said that it wasn't on record, just that it was his funders. So, of course, that's a concern, firstly, with all of these various court applications, who is paying for them, but also the fact that, listen, he's perfectly entitled to pursue whatever he likes in the courts. That's the beauty of a constitutional democracy. But there also reaches a point where Stalingrad lands up clogging the court system and where you are delaying the justice. In the arms deal case, as an example, but also on various other matters, if you look at MK, but also if you look at the private prosecution and the abuse of court process there. On the issue of electricity, it really has become one of my favourite sayings to say that we are clapping for a fish that's swimming because we've had a 13-day load shedding free streak. We should never have load shedding or blackouts or whatever it may be. So that is said in jest. The minister responsible for electricity, Dr. Josienso Ramakgopa, having a briefing earlier today, explaining that streak, but also speaking about maintenance. He said the intensity and frequency of load shedding was coming down because of aggressive planned maintenance. He also said that renewables like solar won't end load shedding, but they remained on course to end it through various interventions. Have a listen.
If you look at the higher stages, stage four, last year, March, this period, the month of March was 12, this year it's four. Stage five, last year, March, it was six, we didn't have this year. Stage six, of course, we didn't have for both years. And if you put them together, for the month of March, number of days of load shedding, it was 30 occasions where we had these various stages of load shedding compared to 26. But what is the important conversation there? Is that you can see that stage one to stage two accounted for half of what we experienced this year, as compared to stage four and stage five of last year. Last year accounted to half of what was experienced last year. So what is the message you are conveying here? Is that the intensity of load shedding is coming down.
That's the Electricity Minister, Hosiyen Ramakgopa, in that briefing earlier today. Remember, he did tell Parliament that there had been 600 fewer hours of load shedding from December to February this year compared to the same period last year. He said that this was a result of various interventions. Stage 1 to Stage 2 accounted for half of what we experienced this year as compared to compared to Stages 4 and 5 last year. So the suggestion from Ramakgopa is that it's coming down, that in the next 5 months, the country would see over 2,500 megawatts of new generation coming online. Although we did have that report that three units at Kusile will be going offline towards the end of the year. But the fact that we have 13 consecutive days without the lights being off, what do you make of that? Well, let's speak to energy analyst Chris Yelland about that. Chris, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. What do you make of the minister's comments this morning and his explanations around maintenance?
Well, look, I've been looking at the data very carefully, the data coming out of Eskom, and this is in the form of what is known as the level of unplanned breakdowns. It's known technically as the UCLF. We also look at the level of planned maintenance, and that then determines what is the availability of generation to meet demand. So if you look at this data, it's absolutely clear that in the first 13 weeks of this year, unplanned outages have been consistently lower than for the same period last year. And at the same time, this has given Eskom some extra space to do additional maintenance. So if you look at what is called the planned outages, known and technically as the PCLF, this trend shows again a trend of increased maintenance for the first 13 weeks of this year that is consistently higher than for the same period last year. Now, both of those are a good sign because it means that there's less breakdowns, giving Eskom the space to do the necessary maintenance. But the two cancel each other out because on the one hand, you're reducing unplanned breakdowns, but you're also increasing your planned outages. So the availability has stayed about the same as the first 13 weeks last year. And the question then arises, what is actually causing the reduction in load shedding? Because we know we are experiencing the significant lowering of load shedding.
The Deputy President, Paul Mashatile, also speaking today, saying that load shedding will be done by the end of the year. Is that realistic?
Well, the trend at the moment is showing a significant reduction in load shedding, which, as I say, is a good thing, and it's caused primarily by a reduction in the demand for Eskom electricity. In other words, a weak economy is causing a reduced demand, and at the same time, Eskom prices are going up very significantly, more than double the inflation rate, and this is causing customers of battery energy, commercial, residential, domestic, commercial, industrial, mining, agricultural, all these sectors
Chris, sorry, we just lost that line there, unfortunately. Chris Yelland, energy analyst, but you get the sense of what Chris is saying there, responding to comments made by the Deputy President and to the Minister of Electricity around load shedding.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Well, let's go to Mozambique now. At least 97 people died when an overloaded boat capsized and sank off the coast of Mozambique late on Sunday. And it's understood this has to do with the fact that a number of those people on the boat were fleeing because of concerns around cholera. Fernando Lima is a journalist based in Mozambique, and he joins us now. Fernando, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Firstly, what do we know about this incident?
Yes, you are right. This accident happened on Sunday, and basically it came out of a rumor spread in the area of Lunga on the coast of Nampula. In fact, the rumor was saying that people were dying every 15 minutes out of cholera outbreak. So the population at that point, not very far from Mozambique Island, decided to flee using two boats. One boat, one bigger boat with a outboard engine, were allocated to women and children. That's the one that sank. And then a sailing boat where men will be heading to Mozambican Island. So unfortunately, this boat didn't have the capacity to take all these people, more than 130 people on the board. And so this fishing boat get unbalanced and was hit by a big wave. And that's how the accident happened, and didn't happen too far from the beach. They were around 100 meters from the beach, but this was an isolated area, so no first aid came, because a number of people came alive to the shores in this Kisanga place. That's the name of the place where the boat sank.
So that there were survivors of the boat?
Yes. Yes, there were survivors that died later on, because no medical aid was provided to those survivors. But in addition to that, there are 18 survivors, that some of them are at a local hospital in Lumbo.
What do we know about the actual outbreak of cholera? Was it as serious as the rumors were suggesting? And what are officials saying about this?
Yes, there is a cholera outbreak. But of course, this thing about people dying every 15 minutes was just a rumor. But unfortunately, for years and years, cholera outbreaks are always surrounded by lots of rumors that cause a lot of problems in the areas that are affected. Namely, the fact that nurses, medical people, health workers are spreading cholera around by the fact that they are placing chlorine in wells. The chlorine in the wells are perceived as they are coming with some poisoning the water, and so people die because of that poison. And again, this is disinformation. Despite the authorities try to campaign against those kind of malicious rumors, the matter of the fact is that health workers have been beaten very frequently, and also health facilities have been damaged, burned, destroyed in several occasions due to all these rumors related to cholera outbreak.
Thank you so much for that clarity, Fernando. Fernando Lima, journalist based in Mozambique, giving us an update there on that accident in which 97 people died when a boat capsized and sank off the coast of Mozambique on Sunday.